This is a step meeting, and I've been graced with the honor, and I've always considered an honor, to give my experience on the 12 steps. I do not speak for AA. No one speaks for AA. It's real important to remember that. All I have is my experience, I have a lot of experience with steps. I've been blessed with lots of people that gave me lots of things throughout my recovery. One of the gifts I've got was history, and history is real important. They say we try not to be controversial when we're reading something at the beginning. There is no controversy. The book says we will do our utmost not to be controversial. I'm going to tell you, I'm going to start off and be controversial because that's the way it was given to me. I was told really early on that the steps, the principle, are the steps themselves, which will get a lot of people all upset because some people will tell you honesty is the principle of the first step. I was taught it's one of the byproducts. There's a lot of other principles, like acceptance, like admittance. Those are principles too, and they all come out of the first step. And I will read what the 12 and 12 says. It's always good to go to where I got it from, not rather than just my opinion. It says AA's 12 steps are a group of principles, spiritual in their nature, which, if practiced as a way of life, can expel the obsession to drink and enable the sufferer to become happy and usefully whole. That's real important to me to keep reading because when I got here, I wasn't real happy and I sure as heck wasn't whole. We got to talk about step one, but before I get there, like I said, I like history. History is real important. The very first man that I ever met was there my very first meeting, and 2 years later became my sponsor. His uncle was one of the original hundreds, so I went through this program with a lot of history lessons, and it's real important. There was a book that came out not too long ago. It's called The Beginner's Classes, or a lot of us call it Back to Basics. In early AA, you weren't allowed to go to an AA meeting until you did your steps. In very early AA, you did your 12 steps before they took you to a meeting, which is very interesting. And the 12 and 12, which is where the steps are expanded on, is nothing more than a 15 years of experience after the big book was written. And what it did, they took 15 years of experience of people working with other people. In the beginning, the book was published in 1939, and I'll read it the way it says. The authors claim that 100 recovered from alcoholism during the first 4 years of the society's existence. This slow rate of growth was partially due to the lack of written instructions on the recovery process. 5 recovered at the end of 1935, 15 recovered in 1936, 40 recovered in 1937, 100 recovered at the end of 1938. Shortly after the publication of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, which was in 1939, 400 recovered, 2,000 recovered in 40, 8,000 recovered in 41, and the growth has doubled from 1941. The growth in AA has doubled annually. That's a pretty interesting statistic when we talk about 1 out of 36 ain't going to make it. So for every negative statistic you hear, if you dig deep enough, there's a positive. And that's something I found true in the book. One of the things that they did, and it started in Cleveland, Ohio, with these beginner's classes. It actually started with Dr. Bob, and if you read Dr. Bob in the good old times, they talk about the beginner's classes. In the beginner's classes, what they did do is they actually did the steps. And in the big book, step one, it says, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives have become unmanageable. The step is described on pages XII to XXX, which is your prefaces, and the doctor's opinion, and then pages 1 through 43. The directions, and there are directions for taking the first step. People say they're not written. Oh, yes, they are. And it was read today, and most of us never hear it. They are on page 30. And I'll read them right out of the book. It's always better that way. It's paragraph 2 and lines 1 through 3. And it says, we learned how to fully concede to our innermost self that we were alcoholics. This is the first step in recovery. The delusion that we like other people, or presently maybe, has to be smashed. or the simplest step one was when they did it in the old days. A lot has happened. As I said, the 12 and 12 came about 15 years later. I spoke to John at the end of the meeting last week and said, what about traditions? Can I tie the traditions in? Because I really don't believe any of us come in here on steps, although we all think we do. I believe I came in on that second step. I found out I really came in on that second tradition, a loving God as he expressed himself through the group. And one of the best traditions that I know is unity. I had to get out of the I theory, and it was all about me, and you guys didn't understand. My experience with the first step is it was wonderful. And that's all I have is my experience. That's all any of us have. So to me, I have to tie in the tradition, and it was the unity of the group that I came in through that gave me the ability to see my unmanageability. That's a pretty twisted way of putting it, but it makes a lot of sense to me. And my experience happened by me going to meetings at first, not because I wanted to. I did not come into Alcoholics Anonymous as an alcoholic. I came in as an addict through a treatment center. And the reason I went to that treatment center was to get my kids back and deal with my ex-wife getting married. And I was tired of living on the street in the middle of January in the city of New York. It was kind of cold. And after 5 years of living in a cardboard box, with money in my pocket and never losing a job, I believed that was normal. And you couldn't convince me otherwise. You guys just didn't understand why I did it. I did it because I didn't want to give my ex-wife money for the children. I did it because, and I was giving her money anyway. That's a whole issue in itself. I went in because I was not going to spend money on rent because it was taking away from my $1,000 a day habit and my addictions and my drinking. I drank every day. Alcohol was definitely there from the beginning, and it was there at the end. I did a lot of other things when alcohol stopped working. And I considered it fun. And anybody that says, I knew I was an alcoholic when I first drank, I find that, just now it's an opinion. It's not in the books, it's definitely an opinion. I find that hard to believe because I don't think any of us drank. We may not like to take, but we did have fun at one time or another. Maybe obscured somewhere along the way, but I had fun for a lot of years. I walked into these rooms, I was 44 years old. When I see someone walking in at 21 years old, I still have a little envy there. I'm not that well yet. But I see those things, and I am very impressed by people who get to see it a lot before I do. That always impressed me. How someone so young didn't have to go through the devastation that I had to go through. And even though I was going through all that devastation, I thought that was normal. See, because my thinking was very warped and twisted. My journey through the first step, and that's where we're on. And I believe a lot of things. They tell me if I came back enough times, my mind would clear up. If I bring into the body, the mind will eventually follow. Didn't like that statement. If I do what I always did, I'd get what I always got. I only had to change one thing, everything. All those little sayings that when you first walk in the rooms are very annoying, especially to someone like me who already had all the answers before you even asked the questions. And I was very annoying when I got in here. I was very defiant when I got in here. I used to always introduce myself as an addict. Not because I introduced myself as an addict for controversy. I did that because I had no respect for the rooms. I had no respect for anything, least of all myself. And I really wanted to get thrown out of here so I can go out and drink again. It's really what I was trying to do when I first got here. So the defiance was still there. And I was told to get a sponsor. Well, I procrastinated with that one from the beginning. The drinking career really doesn't matter where that unmanageability went. That was only part of the problem. The problem is much deeper. The book talks in the doctor's opinion of it being a mental obsession and a physical allergy. And the only remedy, is another one of those controversial points, is a spiritual one. So I don't see three sides to the problem. I see two sides and one solution. Three-sided problem, two sides. I don't get caught in that. I used to, because if somebody said it was a three-sided problem, I'd start an argument. If someone says honesty is the principle, I raise my hand in a meeting and get in saying the principle is a step. I learned to be a little bit more tolerant of others by sticking around a little while. I stopped being a bleeding deacon, as somebody once told me, and became a little bit of an elder statesman, although I don't consider myself an old-timer. I believe that time is not as important as we put it on, because I believe we all have one day, because at any given time, any of us can drink for the stupidest reason. The big ones we always get through. It's the stupid ones we got to watch out for. And I believe that vigilance is very important. Constant vigilance. I believe that working with others is vital to my permanent recovery. The book talks about that. But I was found this man who was like my buddy. And I was told I needed a sponsor, so the first thing I did is I walked over to a hardliner who had 13 years in the program, and I said, would you sponsor me? And in no uncertain terms, and I will not use the language because I've learned to clean it up since I've been here, he told me no. He told me I was didn't belong in this program, that I was an addict, and I belonged in another fellowship, and that if I stuck around for a year, maybe he'd give me his phone number. Still bothers me. Some things still bother me. There was this fellow named Bob Welsh who became my sponsor, who I spoke about. Came out of the men's room and said, I want to talk to you, George. And he said, not everybody in Alcoholics Anonymous is here because they're well. Most of us are here because we're sick. And he says, I'm going to stick my neck out. He says, we're not supposed to do this, but in your case, I think I'm going to make an exception. I believe you're an alcoholic. And I think you ought to read the book, Alcoholics Anonymous. But I didn't ask him to sponsor me. He was a big man. He was like a, hi Bob. He was like a big teddy bear, I used to call him. He was a giant. People would see him in a meeting, and I got to shake. When I shook his hand, my hand went around three of his fingers, so I wasn't going to ask this man to sponsor me, because I figured if he hit me, I was dead. I mean, I weighed 128 pounds when I walked in the room, and I thought I was God's gift to everything in these rooms. I came out of a cardboard box. I didn't even know how to bathe or make a bed, and I really thought all you women that were in the room were going to be in love with me as soon as you saw me. My thinking was pretty wild. And that's pretty much how I walked into these rooms, and I kept that attitude for a while. I've come to read the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, so I did. I went to a 10 o'clock in the morning meeting every day. They read out of the 12 and 12. And I kept hearing things. One of the things, I was tricked into AA. Bob couldn't go upstairs, he had to take an elevator, and he used to say to me, the tables were set this way, going out like these tables, and he used to sit at the end, these big chairs, and he used to tell me to get there a half hour earlier so I could save a seat for him, and I used to get there, and I used to sit and set up the table for him, and sit there and wait for him to come in, and then he told me I had to introduce myself to people, and then he told me how to make coffee. I came in on the ABCs of AA, ashtrays, brooms, and chairs. And I always say cheers for a reason, because I had 30 days of sobriety. I was still defiant. I still wasn't an alcoholic. And he asked me to chair a meeting the day I picked up my 30-day trip. And I liked it. That was great. First of all, I said I couldn't do it. It was against group conscience. He took a group conscience of the group, and he said, does anybody mind George chairing this meeting? Nobody would argue with Bob. So everybody said yes. So I chaired my first meeting, and I liked it, so I went over and I said, I really like chairing meetings. I'm going to make you the official chairman. Every Wednesday, you come here when the club closes, you take all the chairs, you line them up, and you mop the floors. You now the official chairman. And he made me do that for a year and a half. And I did it in the name of the halfway house I lived in. Right? Because I didn't have money to put in the basket. Still, I thought I was manageable, but I was being kind of tricked into AA. And I say that because it's real important. This was not my sponsor. This was the man who guided me from the day I walked in. So that was my first angel when I hit the rooms. There was many others. My unmanageability was not realized when I first came in. I was told to read the big book, Alcoholics Anonymous, the first 164 pages. And I was getting through it, and I was told I needed a sponsor, because otherwise I was getting thrown out of my halfway house. So I heard a guy speaking, who I actually spoke to Saturday night, and he told me if you need to be reminded of your unmanageability, I'll be glad to. He used to tell me that he spent the first, I'd call him at 10 o'clock, and for a half hour he'd be watching TV and hold the phone out here, and every now and then he'd go, I was just so busy, I wasn't listening to him. I was just rattling whatever was going on, and I thought this was the greatest gift of my life. He lived in Del Rey, I lived in Pompano, I had a sponsor, and I couldn't get thrown out of the halfway house. They didn't tell me he was going to come and pick me up every Tuesday night and sit down and read this book with me and take me through the journey of the literature. He had sponsored others. He was not a one-time white chipper. He was in and out of this program for a while. He sure said he worked with us, and the only thing we talked about this Saturday, the only thing left for him to do was to go to the literature because nothing else worked with anybody's sponsor. So I was the blessing of his literature expedition, and that was very helpful to me. Again, this guy that annoyed me, and I now have a sponsor, I'm still going to meetings. I still am mad at my ex-wife for marrying my best friend who I walked in on. That's why I drank, one of my many excuses. I hadn't seen my children in 5 years before I got here. Now I wanted to see my children. I wanted to make that well. My sister died while I was active out and living on the streets. I was chasing all the wrong people for all the wrong reasons. I would find myself bathing literally in toilet bowls in movie theaters, in the projection booths. I would wash my clothes in them, so I looked good. And I would go out and sleep in a cowboy box, and the next day, whatever theater I was in, I'd take my little bag with my spare pair of clothes in, take off whatever I was wearing and wash that, and by the 12 hours, it was dry, and I put on the clothes from the day before. Pretty much how I lived my life for the last 5 years, getting into these rooms, and I thought that was normal. That's the scary part, Paul. That you can convince me what I was doing was warped or twisted in any way, shape, or form. As I say, I was sitting there, and Bob came over to me after I asked this man to sponsor me, who told me what I can do, and he told me to sit down with him, Bob, and he opened up the big book to page 62, and my journey to the first step, and I had read the part of the book, I was up to working into action, basically, and while I was working with a sponsor, and I asked somebody else, because I figured this guy was never going to sponsor me, and I had somebody by name, so I didn't have to do any work, I thought. So I was going to ask this guy, who I liked the way he spoke. And I was really upset. I wanted to go out and drink that day. I really wanted to drink. And Bob sat me down and he says, I want you to read this. And it says, selfishness, self-centeredness, we think, is the root of our trouble. We're driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, self-pity. We step on the toes of our fellows and then retaliate. Sometimes they hurt us, seemingly without provocation. But we inevitably find out we have... that sometime in our past we made decisions based on self which placed us in a position to be hurt. So I had to stop blaming everybody. I did it myself, I was told. I didn't like that. And what did that mean to me now? And I'm sitting in these rooms and I'm hearing things and I don't know what I'm hearing. But this is how I got it. I got to page 62 and I saw that. And then all of a sudden I got to go back a little bit because this is the way I saw the first step. Actually in my head. I remember that, and then I remember seeing this. It says, we were having trouble with personal relationships. These are still the same underlines that I had in my original business. We were having trouble with personal relationships. We couldn't control our emotional nature. We were prey to misery and depression. We couldn't make a living. We had a feeling of uselessness. We were full of fear. We were unhappy. We couldn't seem to be of help to others. From that, I went backwards a little further to the best thing that I've ever seen, and we read it this morning. We read it almost at every meeting. More about alcoholism. It's something that always caught my attention, and it's underlined in here. There's a couple of words, and it's in the first two paragraphs, basically, actually, and then in the third paragraph, there's something else. These are the words, and I'm not going to read the whole thing again, but I'm going to use the words obsession, illusion, insanity, delusion, and incomprehensible demoralization. Now, when I went back to that point, I saw that I had a mental obsession because whether it was the girl that walked in the room that was defocusing me from my recovery because she was wearing tight pants and I decided it was time for me to get well and I was going to help her. We're the best of friends today. That never happened. And I'm very grateful that we became friends. I went to my sponsor with that and he told me, and I just shared the story last night. He told me to tell her exactly what was going on, so I did. Then he told me to tell her I couldn't be with her for a year. Because I was a pretty sick person and I had no right to make her sick too. And that's something that I really believe today. I had to work on me and I didn't know that. So I had the obsession. I was under this illusion. I knew I was delusionary by this point. I didn't know why, but I knew something wasn't right. And I believed I was insane. I believed that there's something was wrong with all of you, and that's an insanity. I was okay, but you were all sick. See, this would work for you guys, but not for me. So I was here with insanity. And the demoralization, I really wasn't demoralized. I felt pretty good about coming out of a cardboard box. I thought that was, you know, really cool thing, you know. How many people in these rooms do that today? I was like an old-time drunk. I wasn't an alcoholic, though. I was still an addict. And I wasn't an alcoholic. The reason I wasn't an alcoholic, or I wasn't a drunk, is that a drunk lived in the Bowery on downtown Manhattan. I lived under the 59th Street Bridge. I was an uptown drunk. And that's how sick my thinker was. So I had to realize I had a disease that was centering in my mind. And that was the key for me. It says in the big book, and I always say it because I was sober for a year and a half, and there was a fellow by the name of Hollywood Henderson, who I can use his name because I know him, and he was sharing his story, and he said he knew he was one of those children, one of those blameless children the big book talks about when he goes into his story. And I said, well, can you tell me where that is in the big book? Because I've read the big book, and I never saw that. It's not in there. And he said to me, well, talk to me after the meeting, and after the meeting, he went to this page and he showed it to me. Well, I'll show you how God works, even when we're not sure we have a God, which is later on. I went home to my big book, and I'm going to read you the paragraph. But I went home to my big book, and in it, not only did I have it highlighted, I had it underlined, and I never saw it. So then I knew the problem, the book keeps changing, wasn't any longer everybody else. The problem was me, and I had that closed mind. And until I let go, absolutely, I was told the result would be nil. And it says an illness of this sort, and we have come to believe in an illness. And that's what actually happened. I came to believe that I was a sick person. Involved those about us the way no other human sickness can. The person has cancer, all are sorry for him. No one is angry or hurt, but not so with the alcoholic illness. Political annihilation of all things worthwhile in life, and engulfs all whose lives touch the sufferers. It brings misunderstanding, fierce resentment, financial insecurity, disgusted friends and employers, warped lives of blameless children. Sad wives and parents, anyone can increase on this list. When I got to that point, I knew I belonged. I knew I was a sick person. I read it in the doctor's opinion. I saw it in how it works. I saw it in more about alcoholism, but I still wanted to be an addict because I could not be addicted to something that was sociably acceptable, and I saw everybody doing it without any consequences. I sat at a meeting, and I heard somebody telling their story, and I don't know what happened, but I had one of these flashbacks. And in that flashback, I removed every drug from 44 years old all the way back to when I was 7 years old, and with it was always alcohol. And I woke up to the realization that I was an alcoholic, and I ceased fighting. The 12 and 12 says it better than anything I can say. It says, until he so humbles himself, sobriety of any will be precarious. Of real happiness he will find none, proved beyond a doubt by the immense experience. This is one of the AA facts of life. The principle that we shall find no enduring strength until we first admit complete defeat is the main taproot from which our society's from flowers. Admitting defeat was a whole issue for me. It was not a problem for me to admit anything. So I thought I was going to get something out of it. So it was easy for me after that to raise my hand and say, I'm an alcoholic. I admitted it. How come I'm not feeling better? Because I sure as hell didn't accept it. And that's something that it says in the 12 and 12. It says, until he's so, I want to read it. I like it much better than I can say it. Until he so accepts his alcoholism and all its consequences, there is no recovery. And again, I can't find it right now, but it says until he so admits all its consequences. All its consequences meant that I had to stop behaving in behaviors like chasing the women around the room. Meant that I had to go and pick up the phone and try and make contact with my mother, who I hadn't spoken to in 5 years, and my sisters, who I didn't like. All its consequences meant that living on the street was inappropriate because I had money in my pocket and paying rent and being responsible. So when I first got here, one of the things I didn't like was first we show up, then we give up, and then we grow up. So first I had to show up. And that was by going to meetings. The giving up and the acceptance and the admittance and the consequences of my behavior, some of them I really didn't want to let go of when I first got here. They were too comfortable. But But I knew one thing. I didn't want to go back to what I used to do. I didn't want to go back to that cardboard box. And I said, I made myself a promise when I first got here that I would chase my recovery the way I chased my addiction. Unfortunately, I have not been able to do that to this day. Because there's no way. As much as I get to this program, I don't stay up 3 days at a time because I can't sleep, because I have something in my body that doesn't let me. But I give this my 110%. I don't take myself seriously anymore. I have a lot of fun in sobriety. There is a life after drinking. There's a life after drugging. But that first step is a real tough step. And the hardest part about taking that first step is that I'm the problem. See, it's no longer my ex-wife. It's no longer my family. It's no longer the way people treated me. I had a lot of problems with that when I got here, because I'm one of the defiant types. You tell me it's black, I'm going to prove to you it's white. I just like to fight and argue. I had to stop fighting. I had to surrender. That's the big word that we don't talk about a lot in first step. Surrender to what? I gave nothing up to nobody. When I was in the treatment center, I look at step one, two, and three, because that's what most treatment centers give you. I wasn't powerless over anything, and if people understood what was going on with me, they would understand now why I was behaving the way I was. There was no power greater than me, outside of money, women, cars, and things. So I wasn't turning, I had to believe in that already, so you couldn't give me a God, and I definitely wasn't turning my will over to the care of your God, or the God that I grew up with. So for me, one, two, and three was done in treatment. I wasn't doing them. Step four, take an inventory, no problem. I'll write about everything that everybody was wrong. No problem doing that. Admitting it to God, I didn't have to tell God, he already knew what kind of person I was. And to another human being, there's no, you get my friends together, they all knew it anyway. See, there was no secrets when I got here, except I believed there was. There's that obsession in the mind again, that illusion that I was living on. People talk about the word, it's not a, denial. I believe long before we have denial, we're either delusionary or illusionary. Because denial, I have to know something is wrong. And if I believe myself and what I was believing when I got here, then I would never see what was wrong. It took the patience and love of others. There's that tradition. Here's where I worked that right in. The unity of others that pointed out my shortcomings that I didn't want to look at. And I was angry with a lot of the people that told me what was really wrong with me. I didn't want to hear that it was not my wife's fault, or I shouldn't blame my children for what my wife wanting to keep them away from me, or my mother for not wanting to speak to me after I turned away from her for 5 years. Well, the fact that my sister died while I was active, and I didn't even show up at her 25th anniversary, and I almost didn't show up at her funeral. At those days, I wasn't responsible, but I sure as hell was accountable. So, you know, when somebody said to me, well, my alcoholism did that, I'm not responsible. Bullshit. I'm responsible. I'm also accountable. Do I blame my alcoholism? No, I got to stop doing that. I was unmanageable, and a lot of the things I did because of alcohol, I would have done without alcohol. And a lot of them I did without alcohol when I first got here. I had to learn to change, and I couldn't think my way out of it anymore. I learned to act my way out of it. And all the knowledge in the world wasn't going to keep me sober. Quoting the book wasn't going to keep me sober. I knew that. Showing up kept me sober at the beginning. Resentment kept me sober. Fear kept me sober. A lot of things kept me sober at the beginning. But it eventually became that thing in the book that says, to find the higher power, the why the book was written. To find the power of God. I found it through the steps. You know, the first step is the first step. We each get here a different way. We all have different journeys. But until I admit it completely and let go of my old ideas, there's no recovery. It's just simple enough of it from my point of view. And that is my point of view only, not AA. That is my journey in the first step. It is now your meeting, and we're going to talk about step one. Enough out of me.